So we are actually starting on the second volume of the chapter one, which is really the beginning of the Upanishad. The whole first section is giving the Adhikari and establishing Nachiketas as an Adhikari. So let's do our Shanti Patra. Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahariryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavati Tamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So second volley, verse one.
Anyachreyo anyarutaiva preyaha. Anyachreyo anyarutaiva preyaha. Te ube nanarte purusham sinitaha. Te ube nanarte purusham sinitaha. Teyo shreya adadanasya sadhu. Tayo shreya avadanasya sadhu. Bhavati hiyate artadya upreyo vranite. Bhavati hiyate artadya upreyo vranite. Anyat shreyaha. Anyat uta eva preyaha. Te ube. Nana arte, so nana arte, purusham sinitaha, tayoho shreyaha adadanasya sadhu, bhavati hiyate artat yaha u prayaha shranite.
So Shankara always will give that little connecting sentence or two to connect each verse or each section with each section. So in this one, how he connects, what he says is, talking about Yama, having really examined the student, the sishya, Nachiketas. So Pariksha, he says Pariksha, having really looked at, examined the shishya, Nachiketas, and vidya yogitam cha avagamya, and having determined, having realized, you know, that he is qualified for this knowledge. Yogitam means qualified, but it's vidya yogitam. So, and having realized, having ascertained, clearly knowing that he's qualified for this knowledge, he says, right? So, having analyzed him, and having realized that he's qualified for the knowledge, now he says. Nice. So he says, anyat shreyaha, anyat uta eva preyaha. That these two things are there. One is called shreyas, the other is called preyas. He said, both of these, shreyas and preyas, sinitaha, they bind both of these. Both of them, having totally different ends, opposing ends, they bind the person. They bind the purusha. So, anyat shreya, anyat uta eva preya. Shreyas, according to Shankara, just to get a little vocabulary, shreyas is nishreyasam. Nishreyasam is moksha. Moksha. Shreyas means that which is absolutely good, absolute good, that which is an absolute blessing, means it's not a dukkha yoni, it's not a womb for suffering, right? As the Buddha would say, anything that's bound by time, any pleasure, any happiness that is bound by time is a dukkha yoni. It's a womb for suffering, because that pleasure, that happiness, that wholeness will definitely come to an end. as long as it's bound or related to or caused by something that is time-bound. It's kind of a no-brainer. We don't usually think about it, but it's true. Anything that's bound by time will come to an end, and whatever pleasure or pain that was being generated by that object will also come to an end. Right? So, there's the person who's after Shreyas is after an absolute good that we call moksha, that which is shivam, that which is auspicious, that which is not going to take you back into the samsara of sukha-dukha-sukha-dukha. And I often say this with another opportunity to say, Swamiji says, Swamiji goes like this. This is samsara. Sukha, dukkha, 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 sukha, dukkha, 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 sukha. We always joke and say, you think it's sukha, dukkha, sukha, dukkha, no. Sukha, dukkha, dukkha, dukkha. That's Shreyas. That's samsara. So, Shreyas is moksha. Shreyas is what we call samsara. It's actually when my search for happiness is directed onto the world or onto some form of an experience which itself is time-bound. So that's the natural condition of all people until they actually realize where the locus of ananda is. The first thing, you know, when we look at the what we call the sadhana chatushtya, the fourfold sadhanas that make you a qualified student for this knowledge, The first one that has to be there for any of the others to be there is viveka. Viveka doesn't start, viveka becomes complete at the time of knowledge, but viveka begins for the mumukshu, for the one who actually seeks moksha, is the viveka is the recognition that every experience that I have, without exception, is time bound. Right? Mm-hmm. Which means that every moment of happiness, every moment of joy, is time-bound. And so, what that means is that there is no possibility for me to attain any type of lasting happiness if that happiness or wholeness or fullness has anything to do with something that is objectifiable. Because anything that is objectifiable, including my body, my sense organs, my mind, my buddhi, all objectifiable, let alone the entire world, to whatever degree, like say it's even your mind in terms of antakarana shuddhi. Antakarana shuddhi means I want a pure mind. Yeah. Why isn't my mind pure? Why do I still think thinking like this? Why do I still have all these things?
It goes after dust bunnies.
When I'm so committed to this knowledge, this is. You have to take it all the way. You have to take the samsara all the way. You know? In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, Arjuna uses this wonderful example talking about having a samatva buddhi, means where you are able to handle the not just the joys and sorrows, but you're able to handle your victory and your success, your successes. And your losses, you know, your successes and failures that take place in the world with a samatva buddhi means a sameness of mind, a sameness of attitude. And then he says, and you even have to have that samatva buddhi toward your inability to do that, toward your failure to do that.
Wow.
There's no exception. There's no exception. So.
Wow. That's what.
Just take some breaths. So Shreya, so Prayas is very widespread, right? Every accomplishment, everything really counts as Prayas to the degree that I'm depending on that for my ananda, for my happiness. If it's an objectifiable experience, it doesn't really matter what it is. I am depending upon something, I'm depending upon that in order to be whole and complete. So, anyat shreyaha, anyat uta eva preyaha, anyat uva preyaha, anyat Anya Uta Eva Prayaha. Okay. So there's these two. And what he says is both of them, non-arte, both of them have diverse ends. Mm. Opposite ends. The arta means the purusharta. Purusharta, we say in for any human being there's four major purusharthas. One is just for security. Samsara. One is for kama, pleasures. One is for dharma, that I get a better next life. And that fourth one is for moksha. Prayas has to do with the first three. Mm-hmm. Oh, the whole first three. The fourth one is moksha.
That's right.
The first three, a person... The first three aren't bad. It's not that they're bad, they're just human. Right? The artha for security, our need for security, our need for kama, all beings have that. It has nothing to do with religion. It has just to do with being human. Mm-hmm. But dharma, there's a religious aspect to that. When we're talking about the Hindu purusharthas. Right. I follow dharma as a samsari so I can reach heaven worlds and so that I can get a better next birth. So that I won't be punished, so that I won't accrue papa karmas, so that I'll accrue punya karmas. Because I can even do a dharma to try to get some pleasurable events here. But if I'm a Hindu, I know that by doing that, I'm going to accrue some papa karma that will really affect, you know, my next birth. So dharma is that commitment to follow dharma. So that Bhagavan won't punish me, in a sense. So that the creation won't punish me. So that the laws of dharma and adharma won't punish me. I'm still, right, dharma, because I'm performing dharma for a result. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. I can be performing as a mumukshu, I can be performing dharma for antakarna shuddhi. Mm-hmm. Then it's not about a result. It's about gaining a mind, result only in the sense of gaining a mind that can gain this knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so we don't consider that as a result. Mm-hmm. I'm still a mumukshu, I'm trying to do what is necessary in order to bring about antakarna shuddhi, in order to release me from all of that. So these three purusharthas are all samsara bound. They all exist within samsara. Moksha doesn't. Moksha is shreyas, the other three really are prayas. Mm-hmm. Prayas does not mean a dharma. It means a jnanam. It means that I have self-ignorance and I'm projecting my ananda or my well-being onto the world and going after it. So these two are diametrically opposed. Either I have a jnanam, I have self-ignorance and I'm going after my ananda in the world, even though all those means and ends are finite and will give only a finite result, I do that because I've had experience of moments of happiness through doing that, and I have not had the viveka, has not taken place yet, to bring about what we call the second sadhana chatushtya for the adhikari, of these fourfold qualifications, where I don't have the viveka yet, and the viveka needs to be there in order to bring about a vairagya. Vairagya means I no longer have the same passion for fulfilling these objects of desire, because I used to think,
now you see,
I used to think that they would fulfill me and complete me, and now I know that they won't. And so there's going to be a whole different relationship with these desires. It's a major adjustment that has to take place for a person. It's an adjustment. Later on, you can have a lot of fun fulfilling all these desires, but they don't have anything to do with your ananda, really. They can be pleasurable and all of that, but they're not something that you depend upon for your well-being. That's a major shift. And so, also your energy is a little bit different. Because your energy, once you realize that, at least initially for the first year or so, or more, your energy is not the same. You're not going to have the same interest in pursuing this, and pursuing that, and pursuing this. Because you no longer have that shraddha that's going to pay off and give you what you actually seek as a human being. You know that it won't. And as a mumukshu, you're now seeking for what will give that. So the problem is, as with a viveka, I only recognize initially, this is kind of the dark night of the soul for a seeker, I only realize that this is all finite. I don't realize that I am free from time. That's jnana. I only realize that none of this is going to fulfill me, vairagya. But the vairagya is not resolving into the ananda of myself. That's not known. Vairagya becomes something very, very positive. It's kind of, vairagya becomes like the helium balloon for an adult. Everything's like a helium balloon. It's fun and I can enjoy it. I can be really engaged in it. I can appreciate it. I can appreciate the incredible wonder of Ishwara. I'd be totally involved. But it's a helium balloon.
Yeah.
So, So here, what he says is, so,
you gotta be quiet.
You have to be quiet for me, because it gets into my mind, okay? Sorry. Just try. It's okay. So, anyat shreyaha, anyat uta eva preyaha, both of these, they both bind the person. Right? They both bind the person. They have totally divergent goals, but this one thing they do, because initially I want this prayas to make me happy, and I do what needs to be done, you know, what I need to do. I'm bound by what I need to do to get that. You know? For the mumukshu, it's the same. I want to be happy. I want to be whole. And so now I'm bound by that means of knowledge and that pursuit for moksha. So either way, you're bound. See what I mean? The only difference is the bondage that takes you toward prayas is painful, and it delivers more pain. Any bondage is painful, right? Because you're working for something that you don't have. Here you're working for prayas, you're working for something that you don't have, you get it, and within a short time you're in pain again. That's the samsara. It's endless that way because the ananda doesn't exist out there. Shreyas is a benign pain. It's a benign bondage. Because it actually delivers the goods. It delivers the ananda, which is not bound, which is not bound by time. And so shreyas is called Shivam, that which is the most blessed, the most auspicious, because it doesn't leave you high and dry. It can't, because it is you, and you are free from time, and the very ananda that you were seeking so fervently in the world, you've now discovered to actually have its being in your own self. And that self is not an object in time, not subject to time, or subject to change, so freedom. But you're bound to be bound either way. Right, but the one completes itself in a very disappointing way, and the other one completes itself in an auspicious way. Then he says, that's what he says the next line, Toyoho. So of these two, Shreyas and Prayas, Shreyaha Adidanasya Sadhu Bhavati. He says, for the one who chooses Adidanasya, for the one who goes toward, he chooses Shreyas. Shreyaha, if I do the same thing, Shreyaha, Adidanasya, for the one who chooses Shreyas, Sadhu Bhavati, there is Sadhu, there is grace, there is Shiva, there is Ananda. Hiyate artha yaha upreha vrinite. It says, yaha, the one who vrinite chooses preya, prayas, for that one, hiyate artha, he slips away from, he falls away from the purushartha, the moksha purushartha. He doesn't gain that blessing. He doesn't gain the blessing. The reason he doesn't gain the blessing is that the ananda does not exist out there. It's like you're chasing it. You're chasing the ananda, whatever your desire, whatever you project it on, you chase it, It's like chasing a horizon. You get close to it and it's gone. You never reach the ananda, you reach the objects. You don't reach the ananda. There's an illusion there. The illusion is that when you reach the object, that you had projected the ananda on, you're so happy because at that moment your mind resolves because you have fulfilled the desire. You've fulfilled the desire in that moment your mind is desireless. You're like a Mahatma. Your mind is desireless. You have pure vairagya. There's nothing that you want at that moment. Yeah? And so in that clear crystal, you know, silent lake, the ananda of your being is released in the mind. It's not that the ananda is being released, but the silence of the mind now is not offering any type of competition to your own being, and your being reflects in the mind in that particular way. Okay. And depending upon the reflection, the quality of the mind, there'll be many and varied different levels of reflection. If your mind can be quiet, very quiet, subtle, so subtle, meditatively subtle. So you have all a variety of degrees of reflected ananda, as though reflected ananda. The mind is still there. In knowledge, what happens is there's a differentiation between the consciousness, which is not influenced by a sukhavritti or a dukkhavritti, by a happy mind, by a quiet mind, or by an upset mind, and then the nature of the mind, the maya, which is in which the consciousness is manifest in a variety of different ways, depending on the quality of sattva in the mind. That makes, you know, sattva, rajas, and tamas. So depending upon the quality of sattva in the mind, your being reflects in that mind in a variety of different ways. We like the positive side when the mind is more and more quiet. Whenever you fulfill a desire, you're moving over to the quieter side of the mind that gives you different varieties of stress-free mental states, which give different types of ananda. We have different names for them all. Joy, pleasure, happiness, compassion, bliss, you know, many, many different names. They're just labeling different levels of quietude in the mind. Whereas the whole negative spectrum, right, that's tension in the mind, different degrees of tension. If you get into the most tense, you're in like a hell stage.
Yeah.
Because you feel totally, that the state of mind is totally divorced from your own nature.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you are there and you're lighting up that vritti that you're taking yourself to be, right,
mm-hmm.
does not reflect you in any way. It's kind of like the sun illumining muddy water. There's just no reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And what if you are your mind? That even though that mind is known, now this takes us to the meditation, even though the mind is known, because that's all that is there, is knownness. So whatever vritti is there, it is known. We take ourselves to be a knower, there is no knower really. Knower known only exists within duality. From the standpoint of me, there is no experience of a knower, there is the self-evident nature of my being. And that self-evident me, when present, in a muddy mind, in a very dense mind, there is only me for the ajnani, the one who has self-knowledge. There is only the muddy me. Right? The me is still very much there, but it's muddy. In the clear, like the clear water bucket, in that mind that's so clear, that mind resonates with me. It's like invisible. And I feel so at home. Because the mind is not an obstruction. All of these problems are for the samsari, for the one who doesn't have that viveka has not completed itself, where you recognize your own presence, and sometimes your own presence, the me is illumining a muddy mind, and sometimes an agitated mind, and sometimes a silent mind. But your presence is differentiated. And the buddhi can take action, the buddhi, which owns you, your buddhi, resolves as into you, yourself, into the self. That buddhi that is owning you, then can take action to be helpful to that mind. All the inner child work or talking to the hurt part, whatever we do, we have all so many things that we can do, but we can't do them. We can't do them when the only one there is the muddy water. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. The buddhi has to differentiate itself. That's why in the meditation I was talking about daydreaming. So we have so many different types of daydreaming. Daydreaming means that whatever the emotion or thought flow or whatever, that you're no longer in relationship to it, you're contained within it. And at some point, as the daydream goes on, which can be all in terms of feelings, a daydream just of feelings, you know, and then a network that works around those feelings, at some point you wake up. You know? Mm-hmm. At some point, it can go on and on and on. It can be miserable, 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 totally contained with it. You can't think outside of it, and all of a sudden something happens and you wake up and you're able to come into relationship with it. But until I do, that's why. Sometimes a lot of time with any daydream, it's all unconscious. Mm-hmm. Something has to happen to bring you back. Mm-hmm. To bring you back to come into an awareful relationship with that daydream. And then the daydream becomes objectified. It's not a daydream anymore. Because now you are there. Right? Mm-hmm. When, because of our nididhyasana and contemplation, the different ways we said owning our knowledge in nididhyasana, you know, in contemplation, you keep learning to bring your mind back to yourself, to be yourself, you know, so that it knows, the mind even knows that, to do that, you know. It's like making an auto-suggestion, you know. You continually learn how to do that, and so the daydream then doesn't last for very long. Just think about this. What if you don't know about that? What if there is no viveka between your being, the Atma, and your mind? Is there no viveka between your being and your emotions? So then you're just at the mercy of whatever happens to be going on in your mind. It's really a very awful thought. So he says, so in this verse he says, so of these two, the one who chooses the Shreyas, he's blessed. For him there is sadhu, there is shivam, there is auspiciousness. For the other, the one who chooses the Prayas, that person slips away from their goal. Their goal. Which is, see, this is another thing to understand. It doesn't matter what the purusharta is, whether it's artha, kama, dharma, or moksha. The goal is ananda. It's like, why do I want this kama? Kama means this desired object. I just want the desired object. Well, why do you want it? Why is it desired? Because I think that might be really happy if I can have that thing. Why do you want this artha? Why do you want this security? Because I can relax, I'll be happy, I'll be complete, I won't have to worry. It's all ananda. It's all of dharma. Why do you want a better next birth? I can be more happy. I can be more whole, more complete. It's not so, you know, I just want a little more misery. Just give me a little more misery. It's never that. It's, everything is about ananda. The problem is the ananda is projected onto samsara, and then I'm chasing after it. That's the problem. The problem is one of ajnanam, atma jnanam. Atma, you know, ignorance of myself, ignorance of the source of ananda, that I'm ignorant of it, that's this my being. That being is projected out, and I run after it. That's prayas. So there's a huge difference, diametrically opposed pola to prayas and Shreyas. So the next verse. Shreyas cha prayas cha manusha etam manusha metaha. Shreyas cha prayas cha manusha metaha. Tausam paricha vivinakti dhiraha. Tausam paricha vivinakti dhiraha. Shreyo hi dhiro bhi prayaso vranite. Shreyo hidhiro gipreya savrinite Preyo mando yogya yoga chemat vrinite Preyo mando yoga chemat vrinite Shreyaha cha manusham etaha Tau samparitya vivinakti dhiraha Shreyo hidhiraha abhiprayaso vrinite Preyaha mandaha yoga chemat vrinite Here he says Shreyas and Prayas, Manushyam Etaha. Both of them approach the man, the person. Equal, here they come, both of them come. But both of them come together. Right? Because the Shreyas is really the Atma, right? And the Prayas is the experience, objectified experience. You never have one without the other. So for somebody to choose, the Ajnani, right, who does not have Viveka, is going to choose Prayas, which is pervaded by Shreyas, the Atma. So the two come together. Okay, Shankara makes that clear in the commentary. Mm. But then he says, the Vinakti Dhiraha, the one, that intelligent person, that person who has Viveka, that Dhiraha, Samparitya Tau, having analyzed both of these, having thought over both, right? He is able to discern, to discriminate the two, having thought it over, you know, the two polas, these two pursuits, having really analyzed them and thought about them, thought about his own ananda, thought about his own life, what he's seeking, what he wants, where the ananda is, realizing, gaining that viveka, that none of this is going to give me that. It's impossible. It's not its fault. It's impossible by its nature to give me what I seek. And this is not what I want. What I want is to be a whole and complete. That's a dhiraha who has this viveka. Vivinakti is the viveka. He, having thought this over, having analyzed his experience, he is able to discriminate between these two. And so he says, Shreyaha hi dhiraha abhivranite prayasaha. That dhiraha, that one who has that viveka, abhivranite, abhi in the line goes over to the verb, abhivranite. He chooses without doubt. Abhi means there's no way to go back. Abhivranite. He chooses, period. He chooses shreyas prayasaha, over prayas. He chooses Shreyas over Prayas. Because of that viveka, having analyzed, he's discerned, you know, the one will not give him what he seeks, and therefore he chooses with clarity, without any way to turn back, he chooses Shreyas. There is no way to turn back once you realize the problem. There is no exception to the problem. It's not like, I just can't think of anything out here that could possibly make me happy in a lasting way, but there must be something. So let me find that something. No, there's nothing. There's nothing because everything that exists within objectifiable creation, everything that exists within time and space on every level of subtlety is bound by time. That is the Achilles heel. That is the problem. It is bound by time. By its nature, it comes into being and goes out of being. And not only that, everything about me, the seeker, comes into being and go out of being. This body, this mind, the sense organs. That's why Nachiketa is even told to Yama, all of these pleasures will just burn out my senses. You know, it's not like my senses and my body and my mind and my sense organs will stay, you know, virile and alert. All of them will get old and die as I'm enjoying these things. You know? So these things themselves will come and go, but everything about me, my sense organs, my mind, my buddhi, my body, all of it also comes and goes. So how is this going to be an answer? Once you see it, There's no turning back because there's no exception. You know? You just negated the whole universe of perceivable or objectifiable experience, and now you think that there's an exception. The exception has to be outside of objectifiable experience. So who is that going to be? Only me. But not the me that can be objectified. So not the me of the ahankara. The me of the ahankara is this body, this mind, this sense organs, any upadhi. Anything that can get any objectifiable experience that can get the I is called an upadhi, and the I is called the ahankara. This also is not going to do it for me. That's why Nachiketas asks Yama, is there anything about me that survives death? Is there an atma? Is there a self that survives death? Survives death means survives time. Is there anything about me that survives?
Wait, he's asked that here?
Yeah. The beginning. So then he says, that one chooses, that diraha chooses Shreyas over Prayas. And then he says, Prayaha mandaha yoga kshema vrnite. The manda means a dull-witted person. Dull-witted person only in reference to that dira, to the viveki. The one who has not gained that viveka, that manda. He chooses vrnite, he chooses prayas because of yoga kshema. Yoga kshema means, yoga means let me gain this and gain this and gain this and gain this for the sake of my body, for the sake of my children, for the sake of my pleasure, for the sake of getting a better next birth, for the sake of my security. That's yoga. Kshema is let me protect these things that I've gained. So I choose prayas because there's many things that I want, and then I have to protect all of those things. So that's saying, yoga kshema is a saying that we use all the time. Bhagavan will say, give me your yoga kshema. Let me take care of the yoga kshema. But the samsari, the one who has yet to become a mumukshu, a viveki, yoga kshema is what they have. Let me gain the things that will make me happy and let me keep them also. Let me not be unhappy. That's the idea. So because of yoga kshema, the mandaha, the one who has not yet matured into that, does not have that viveka buddhi yet, that person chooses prayas.
Swasti prajabhyat paripalyantam nyayena margena mahim mahishah go brahmane vyashubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyaha prithivi sasya shalini desho yamcho bharahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhayah Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah Sarve santu niramayah Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kashchit dukha bhag bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amritam gamaya Om Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudach Shate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
Why is it that we're so familiar with the, at least I hear it all the time, the word moksha, but not the word shreyas? How are they different, shreyas and moksha?
They're not necessarily different. You probably don't hear it nishreyasa either, right? Because shreyas, the moksha is the word that we normally use, but shreyas means the absolute good or that which is a blessing, you know? And so now shreyas is being differentiated from preyas in reference to moksha, that which, and samsara. So, yeah. There's other words for shreya, for moksha also.
Yeah. Oh, there are.
Yeah.
For, like, well.
Like mukti and.
Mukti,
yeah. Different, there's different words.
But that's other forms of the word moksha.
Yeah, but there are other words too. I just have to think of some of them.
Yeah. Well, it's nice. To know another,
you know, term. Like they have 100 words for tree. It's the Sanskrit vocabulary is very, very vast.
Mm-hmm.
And everything used to be written in like in poetry and rhyme. So you'd have words ending in every letter, and some words are one syllable, and some are two syllables, and some have long consonant, long vowel, and then a short vowel, and the opposite. So.
But essentially, prayas is the seeking of pleasure, and shreyas is the seeking of moksha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as you know what you mean by those words.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little more, what exactly and actually happens when the buddhi resolves into yourself?
Well, if you're talking like a complete resolution, like in, if we use the word resolve, if you're talking about like in a meditative state, okay? In a meditative state where the buddhi, instead of the buddhi being focused on an experience, anything objectifiable, if the buddhi, if the thought is focused on anything objectifiable, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be a physical object, it could be a mental state, and anything that is other than my being, then that buddhi, there's going to be a subject-object relationship, and that this will be an experience known, okay? But what about when the buddhi, when its focus is on its own being, on consciousness itself? Then the buddhi, instead of being creating an objectifiable experience, right, resolves into the subject. So now you have the subject illumining a buddhi whose very content is the subject, instead of the content being something objectifiable. Mm-hmm. And so what they use for an example for that is like if I hold a candle flame up to the sun, okay? Initially, even in what they call savikalpa samadhi, I mean there's still a differentiation there, you can make out the edge of the flame, even though the content is the same, sun and the content and the flame. Okay. But within a moment, the sun will overwhelm even the outline, even though it's there in a subtle form. So the Buddha, when we don't use resolve in the sense of like it resolves, it goes away, it means it totally comes into, it totally resolves into the subject rather than be resolving or focusing. So it's 100% focus on the subject rather than on any objectifiable experience. So that's the, when we use resolve in terms of meditation. Okay. So, but now you can use it in a simpler way also, where when your mind is active or agitated or lost out in samsara somewhere, you can bring the buddhi back to yourself. When you bring the buddhi back to yourself, then the aham, your sense of I, is not landing on an upadhi. Remember, an upadhi means any conditioning adjunct, like an emotional state or the mind itself or the body. Instead, you, because of your knowledge, you resolve your mind into yourself. But we're not using resolve in such a big way. It just means that there's a shift from the ahankara. Ahankara means there's a shift from my identification with an upadhi to my identification with myself on the part of the buddhi. And then the buddhi is speaking from me. For jnani, that's what most of the time it's only that. You're speaking from your own being. You're not speaking from an agitated state or an emotional state or usually thoughts themselves. There's usually the buddhi has a subject-object relationship with a thought or with a memory. It's when the emotions come that there's a pervasion of the emotion so that you're thinking within the emotion. But I get vritti after vritti after vritti after vritti all contained within the same emotion.
Could you say that this kind of resolve is like being present?
It's like being present, or let's put it this way, because I can be present to you but my mind can be sorrowful or agitated. Right? I can still be present.
Yeah.
Okay. But if my buddhi is with myself, right, then the aham is with me, not with the agitated state or the emotional state. Or whatever the state is, it's with me, with its own self. And then being myself, then I'm present to my emotions or what's going on in my mind, and I can be with that. I can be with it. The buddhi, enjoying myself, you know what I mean by enjoying, where the I is with me, then is with all the experiences I have and all the people I'm with and whatever I'm doing it from my own center, not from the center of an emotion or confusion or something else. That's when, in fact, when I'm acting from a place, from someone who is not me. I am not my emotion, but I'm acting from my emotion. I'm speaking from my emotion. So then that means the emotion is overwhelming the buddhi. Mm-hmm. And so the ahankara has landed on the emotion, which has overwhelmed the buddhi. But in an instant, the buddhi can objectify the emotion and can own up its own being. You're either identified with samsara or you're identified with yourself. It's kind of like that.
Not when you're overwhelmed like that.
When you're overwhelmed, usually when you're overwhelmed, that's what I'm talking about, like a daydream, because you're contained within samsara completely. You're contained within your emotion. You're feeling, seeing, living out of your emotion, right? Mm. But in a moment, you can change that. But that moment has to come. You know, sometimes the moment, that's what I mean by daydreaming. There's a moment when you wake up. But that's why doing shravana, doing nididhyasana is so important, because your mind gets used to being with you. So it spends much more time being with you than not being with you. And so when you're lost in that type of samsara, it already knows to come home. You wake up from it more quickly.
Yeah, it seems like it's also trained, because from nididhyasana, it seems like a lot of the time when the buddhi resolves into the self, it's momentary, like a fraction of a second, and then it's back to whatever. And then it's also just the getting used to bringing back.
Which is nididhyasana.
Yeah.
Right? Because that you don't think that, you know, nididhyasana, I'm just with myself. No, you're bringing your mind to yourself. You know, and you get used to being able to do that. And also, the more you're with yourself, the more vairagya you have, because when you're with yourself, there's wholeness there. You know, and these things don't matter so much. Nothing matters as much as really the wholeness of your own being, because that's what you're always seeking anyway. You know, and so the mind really, really starts to settle down. But you know, we're up against beginningless lifetimes of seeking for ananda, for our own wholeness. And so then this teaching comes along and you see it, it's like opening up the reeds, but when you walk out of the class, the reeds just flop back over for some time, you know.
Yeah. I heard it once described as like this hand that just, like from the mind.
Yeah. But that's to be expected also. Hmm. You know, it takes time. So there's so many examples. I like the little bonfire example.
What's that?
The bonfire, it's in the Bhagavad Gita where Swamiji says it so well. On the beach you build a huge, kids are building a huge bonfire with all the driftwood and everything. But then to light it, you know, you have to protect that little flame. And protect it and get it going. But once it gets going, the wind would normally, the little flame, just blow it right out. But once it catches, the wind just makes it burn even more. And that's how this knowledge is. The more your mind knows, the more it knows. Mm. The more it knows, the more it knows, you know? Mm. And it's like the bonfire, but you have to let this knowledge do its work, and you have to do your work too. Yeah.
So it's not like Viveka's a little process that you set in motion when you see a wrong identity or you're overwhelmed. I mean, it's not an activity, especially.
Well.
Yeah, I mean, you don't say to yourself, now it's time to use Viveka.
Well, you don't might not say it, but that's what you have to do. I've talked about that in the meditation. That there, you do have to perform an act of bringing your knowledge to the forefront.
Is that act Viveka?
Yeah, it can be viveka. Viveka just means that it's discrimination between yourself and me. So that means you can talk about that in a lot of different ways.
Bringing it back is actually training yourself to be aware to bring it back.
Yeah.
That's just something you have to build. It's not
you have to build it or not. But the thing is that say, when we do meditation, we continually bring our mind back, right? Mm-hmm. When you're out in the world and you're overwhelmed with an emotion, you can stay wallowing in that emotion, or you can bring your mind back when you get an opening to do so. The problem is when you're wallowing in an emotion, you're totally engulfed in the emotion, there's oftentimes the buddhi is not available to even think, let me bring my mind back.
Yeah. Right?
But if you're doing contemplation, you know, and you have a value for that, and you do an auto-suggestion, like say your mind is always falling into an emotional pain, and you make a suggestion, auto-suggestion is incredible. I mean, it's a tool that we have, mm-hmm. where you say, next time my mind feels like this, this is what I'm going to do. You make that commitment. It's like a sankalpa. When my mind does this, I'm going to do this. And then when your mind does that, that sankalpa, that auto-suggestion kicks in. So it gives you a space to actually bring your mind back. Now the question is, say you make that sankalpa, seriously make that sankalpa, and so it works. The emotion is there, you're overwhelmed. Okay, that's the situation that the sankalpa kicks in, the auto-suggestion kicks in. Gives you a second to bring your mind back, or you can not do that. But at least it'll give you a chance to do it. But sometimes, seriously, our commitment to the pain is much more than our commitment to do that work. And so you have to work on that. You know, you have to work on that. And at least get yourself just once. This one time is a big, big thing. You get yourself one time to do it. And then you'll start seeing the rewards, because there's immediate rewards to do it.
But so there is a sort of a process there then.
There is a process.
But it's done subtly, or it's done with auto-suggestion, or it's done...
Auto-suggestion is good. Yeah.
And the sankalpa is sort of an auto-suggestion.
Suggestion. You make the auto-suggestion, right? Mm. And then you have to follow up on the auto-suggestion. And what I'm throwing out there for you to really think about is that sometimes your commitment to the pain or the worry or the justification for your pain or your suffering outweighs your vairagya or your wanting to come back to yourself. Mm-hmm. And that just keeps you wallowing in the pain. Mm-hmm. So you have to do some manana over that. If you can wear that shoe, because I've realized that for myself. That was a great part of my own personal growth, was to realizing that I was choosing to stay in the pain. There was some value there. You know, and then once you realize that, then you can do something about it. That's a big little step in consciousness, just to realize that you're actually valuing and justifying staying in your pain more than getting out of it. And there comes a time when you realize this, none of it's worth it.
Is it the familiarity of it? Does it, you know?
I think there's many things. A lot of it is self-righteous justification for this person. And this world has hurt me. This person has hurt me. These people have hurt me. These people victim have done this. The victim being a victim.
Shame.
So you really kind of had what we're talking about here. You would have a greater value for the pain and the worry than the
action. You have a greater value for being the victim than you have for being free. You all have to own this. This is a big thing to own.
Every one of us have to own it in ourselves.
But that really hurts if you have that kind of thing. If you do that, it hurts.
It hurts really badly.
Wow, that's
But it's hard to get out of it, too, until you realize it.
Wow. I wonder how much time we spend. How much time I spend.
Hi, Sunna. Yeah. Yes, it's daylight savings in the States now. It happened last week. Oh, that's why everybody's so late online.
What a waste of time.
All of Europeans are late online. Let me answer some of these online
questions. So they missed an hour.
Let me answer some of these questions here.
Edward,
I'm just going to answer a couple of these. Hi, Hal. To really choose Shreyas completely, does one have to understand the entire Vyavaharika is produced by avidya, mula vidya, maya? To choose Shreyas completely? No, I don't think you have to understand that. I think you need the first two of the sadhana chatushtya. The first two give the mumukshutvam. That's viveka, which is the first half, is realizing that prayas will not work because it exists within time, right? So there is no possibility of getting any lasting happiness or wholeness or fullness if it's associated with anything within that exists within time on a subtle level or a physical level. And that, if that knowledge is there, that will produce what we call vairagya. And that vairagya means there's a dispassion now for prayas, right? And that dispassion for prayas is a dark night of the soul in the sense that it leads to mumukshutvam, that state of being a mumukshu, because you do no longer have a solution. Mm-hmm. Because everything that you could possibly do is not going to help. So now there is either something to know or we're finished. Because it's not going to be about doing or gaining anything. Mm-hmm. Because doing, gain, all exists within samsara. Does that help? And then, but then how, with these things, then one gains a teacher and starts to gain knowledge, then all the vyavahara and avidya and all of that, mula, avidya, maya, all of these things become clear. But you can't even be a mumukshu without those first two viveka vairagya. So then Lara says, is there something like losing one's personal boundaries and confusing that with non-objectifiable presence, like taking the candle to be the sun? Mm. Well, taking the candle to be the sun is a huge problem, because that's a problem that if you're a teacher of Vedanta, that's a really good one to be aware of. Because what happens is that because you can have meditative experiences or experiences of bliss or ananda that are vrittis, because we do can have those various types of thought modifications, meditative thought modifications that are full of ananda, the student will then think, ah, I've seen myself, but it went away. Swamiji always joke, Swamiji, I saw myself, I'm so clear, but it keeps going away, Swamiji. You know, he always makes fun. Because, he makes fun because this is a profound problem. Because the way that we know things in the world is by having a thought modification. And so now I have a thought modification of myself, you know, which is an objectifiable experience that comes and goes. So a different type of process of knowing takes place with Vedanta, with this means of knowledge, where the things that are objectifiable are negated, and then the self, which is not objectifiable but which is self-evident consciousness, is pointed to. And that is not an experience that comes and goes. That is an experience which is changeless, timeless, and present as the very being of every thought modification that a person has. So there has to be, there's nothing wrong with these meditative experiences are fine. It's only when you think that's the self that you're seeking, and now it's gone away, and now let me have another one. That if it can come and go, it's not you.
Mm-hmm. And so those thought modifications in meditation, they will go. They will go away.
They will go. But the self, the presence, the self-evident presence of yourself doesn't come and go at all. And it's self-shining. That has to be differentiated and present to every vritti. It's good to have these contemplative vrittis that are absorbed into yourself as long as it's accompanying the teaching. So that even in that vritti, you can make that differentiation, because when the vritti goes away, what we call jnana vritti goes away, you remain. So that one has to be differentiated from all experience. Mm. That's so important. Mm. So then Jagadish says, nice class, he's saying. Everything's going well at the farm, yeah. I hope you can be there this summer too. We've got a lot of work scheduled for you, Jagadish. We're going to build some things.
Oh, really?
With Beth.
Greenhouses. Are we going to have some greenhouses?
Yeah, we're going to do that, but we're going to do something.
Did you bring your
else.
Overalls, Beth?
You got plans.
No, we'll get some people together, do something.
I'd love to have us be part of that. I'm going to take the Master Gardeners class.
Good.
I want to learn about more about vegetable growing and flower growing and fruit trees.
We've actually had trees. We've actually had some winter garden that worked. Mm-hmm. A nice lot of kale. Mm-hmm.
Good. So, anytime there's this identification, whether it's victimhood or some little vritti or whatever, seems like there's always a physical component. There's something going on in the body.
Yeah.
And that suggests that in my experience it seems that the pull, there's always a big component of the dehatmabuddhi. It's not like a conscious thought, I want to stay a victim. It's like there's this pull through the body to
what
that familiar, habitual.
The body.
Even Jung will say, and a lot of psychologists now kind of say that the unconscious, and of course emotions are unconscious. Mm. Emotions are accepting, oh, let's have this emotion now, let's think, you know.
It's instinctual.
They come, they're triggered. Okay. And so they're held in the body.
Yeah.
And so when you really have an emotion, we call it an affect, when it's really there held in the body, and it's also a lot of chemistry is going on there too. So you can't just get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't just pass. But that doesn't mean you can't objectify it and be with it. Mm-hmm. And that changes the chemistry of it, actually. Mm-hmm. But you still have a way of being with it, and the Buddha can be with it, can come into dialogue with it, it can be helpful. Yeah, and then the emotion or the affect or the agitation actually has a sanctuary. Mm-hmm. It has an inner friend, you know, that can be there for it instead of the inner friend being not present, just totally overwhelmed by the emotion.
So these little ones inside are they're usually embedded holding, in the body, then, is that
they
what
are,
you're saying?
Yeah. They're holding a lot of affect. That's why they're in there.
Huh. Mm.
That's why when you get into a dialogue with a little one, you can feel the affect releasing, you can feel emotion. You know, and you can feel change taking place. You can feel them getting well.
Mm-hmm. So in, does Vedanta teach that there's ever a time when there's no vritti happening?
No, there's never. As long as you have a sukshma sharira, there's going to be a vritti. But it's what we call an eti sukshma vritti. It means very subtle. So just say, in the candle flame example, mm-hmm. when the mind is there focused or resolved into the self, it's eti sukshma. Because when you come out of that, you have memory. You can talk all about it. You know? It's the same in the deep sleep. It's eti sukshma because the mind now is in, it's a little bit different. When, in mm-hmm. like Nirvikalpa Samadhi, the mind is awake, but it's totally resolved into the self.
So there's no off, but they're just kind of like super attenuated.
Yeah. If you want to talk about off at all, it's in deep sleep. But even then, the vritti is not, the buddhi is not gone, the instrument is not gone, it's unmanifest. Whereas in nirvikalpa, it's not unmanifest, it's awake, but it's totally resolved into its own being, so that even the outline of the vritti is not noticeable.
So the unconscious is, oh, I'm sorry, the unconscious is held in the body? Is that what you,
yeah, well,
is that what
well,
I heard?
Well, even the mind is held in the body, but the unconscious is held in the body, and that's why you can feel a lot of physical release, actually, as you let go of a lot of these emotions, and kind of the baseline of your mind kind of settles down.
So it's not a kind of a mental activity, then, this unconscious?
Well, Edward, it's not like there's a mental activity out here. The whole thing is embodied, right?
Yeah,
but they're finding that the unconscious stores itself in the body. That's why they, when they do things like Reiki and Rolfing and all of these things, mm-hmm. that so much emotion is often released. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is all in the realm just of psychology.
When I was young, I would get these emotional storms, and it would like drain all the energy out of me. I can remember as a child being like completely exhausted by some emotion, whether it was grief or anger or whatever. I would just be, the only thing I could do was sleep, because I would just be exhausted.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I haven't had anything that much recently, but I remember how much physicality there was to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In fact, sometimes you can take your consciousness, your mind, and go to different parts of your body. You can feel the emotion in your body. And then when you can come into dialogue with that feeling, and a lot of times a lot of images and things will release out of the body.
And it's very much connected to the breath. A lot of times if you breathe, you can breathe through an emotion, or
mm-hmm.
you can bring it on. Depending on how you breathe.
That's right, the breath and the mind
like
are
actors
very
will,
connected to.
Yeah, actors will pant to bring on anger,
yeah,
things like that.
That's right. Okay, everybody, should we call it a night? Let me just see, I have one more question here. Oh, okay. Hi, Catherine. Okay, everybody. Have a nice week.